This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You may already know that the Football Ramble have teamed up with Audible.co.uk to offer you a free audiobook of your choosing when you sign up for a free 1 month trial at audible.co.uk/footballramble. So if you want Why England Lose by Simon Cooper and Stefan Szymanski, I Partridge by Alan Partridge, or The Football Men, Up Close with the Giants of the Modern Game by Simon Cooper, then sign up at audible.co.uk/footballramble or choose from a range of about 60,000 other titles. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep, whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. Go to audible.co.uk/footballramble and sign up now.
It's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen, from Kiev, no less. I'm Marcus, and I've got three friends with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
Pete's back.
Yep, I'm back.
And it's just lovely to have you back.
Popped out for a walk.
A lot of people were worried about you, Pete.
Well, I don't want to go into it.
No. Nothing to worry about there, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we're going to begin this second show from Kiev with the wonderful news that England beat Sweden 3-2. Unless you're Swedish, of course, that's not wonderful news. And you probably knew it, but we were there. We were at the game.
I think we did our bit. I think we helped them.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly helped the Swedes because we were sat in between the... Now, we never get Marcus Speller to book anything.
This is nonsense, by the way. I booked the tickets on the UEFA website.
And we ended up in the Sweden section.
Clearly put my address down as England, and they gave us tickets that were... Towards the Swedish end.
Towards the Swedish end.
But we're not that. We weren't in the nucleus.
We were in a sea of yellow.
We were utterly in the nucleus. There are worse away teams.
I was going to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I had my England top on and I thought to myself, if this was, you know, one of the teams that don't like us, I think I would have just taken it off and lobbed it. Lobbed it over the side.
Taking it off, gone down the front and given it the big one topless.
Yeah.
That's what you'd have done.
Yeah, they'd have known I was English.
Yeah, I mean, if you were topless, they'd have known you were English.
So. Yeah. There was a very good rapport, as there often is, between the English and Swedish fans.
Yeah. Oh, they were brilliant.
In and outside the stadium, yeah.
My particular highlight would have been them outside the bar we were in, singing at a bunch of England fans, go home to your ugly wives, go home to your ugly
disrespectful to English women.
Incredibly so.
I didn't like it. No, the Swedes outnumbered the English 4-1.
It felt like a Sweden home game.
Yeah.
Which is strange because it's often England who bring the most supporters to tournaments and certainly the games they play. And I remember when England played Denmark in 2002 and the Danish players were just like, the England national anthem, they thought, flipping heck, this is like a home game for England.
I think the Swedish fans, whilst they were very vociferous and many in number around the stadium and outside the ground and in the bars, inside the stadium, I think they missed the chance to make it like a home game. They were very quiet.
Yeah, they were quiet. Well, and we were sat amongst them as well, and the atmosphere still wasn't hugely sort of energetic, I suppose. They were whistling England a lot for sort of
yeah, that was pretty much it,
though,
wasn't it?
And the occasional long ball.
And the England fans would certainly made their presence felt, even though there was
there was a couple of chants of "Can we sing a song for you" to the Swedes.
Yeah,
But no, it was the fans were brilliant, and also the Swedes again. What was nice as well when you come out the ground. And obviously they've just been put out of the tournament. Yeah. Some fans would have been, you know, rather annoyed at that, and perhaps, you know, trouble could have flared up. But very gracious in defeat.
Oh, they were brilliant, and you know, and it's worth mentioning that there's so many of them just simply because they play all their games here. So it's not like
that's right. All three of their games are in Kiev. The lucky things.
Yeah, so they've got a base here, as we said in the sort of last show. That said, it was an amazing atmosphere in the ground. It was almost like, rather than the atmosphere being generated by singing back and forth between groups of fans, it was almost like the anticipation could be felt. It's the first time I've been to a competitive England game overseas, And it's almost, obviously it's like going to an away game, and away fans generally tend to be better, but what you get is you get two sets of away fans. It's almost like it really does sort of ramp the atmosphere up. It was great to be a part of.
Also, within the stadium, they've made efforts to do that. I mean, there was an actual countdown to kickoff.
Yeah, I know. It was very NFL. Very sort of NHL, wasn't it?
I'm not sure about it.
I don't really like
well,
it.
Well, he didn't kick it. He said 10-1, and then they didn't kick off.
Yeah, because Zlatan had the ball. Yeah. I'll decide.
I'll decide when it begins.
This starts when I'm ready, which is now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very odd thing to have that kind of a countdown to it. But it does make you realise, because there was a real sense of anticipation. And I almost felt nervous because of it. So that must translate to the players. And it does show you how different a big game is from your sort of run-of-the-mill game. The atmosphere is so different. It reminded me, Marcus, of when we went to the Champions League final. Yeah. It was just constant energy, or certainly before the game at least. It did sort of dwindle a little. But you've got to be able to handle that. It's a completely different set of circumstances than from a normal game. So to keep your head and be able to play your natural game is impressive.
Where I was sat next to four English fans who were just so delighted to be there. It actually became quite infectious. First of all, I was thinking, oh, these guys are going to be idiots, but they're actually really cool and they're enthusiastic. And everything was turned into a chant. So as soon as they started learning that for the national anthems, they started going, national anthems, national anthems. I was like, not everything needs a chant. The national anthems are music anyway, so you don't need to chant this.
Yes.
and then they kept coming back with massive boxes of beers, and obviously not realising that all the beer in the ground was non-alcoholic. Which is why it was only about just under £2.
Did you know that, Pete?
No, I didn't know that. No.
Still acted drunk though, didn't you?
Yeah, did. A giddy goose.
At one point, Pete realised that we were surrounded by a lot of people who wouldn't speak English, so I was chanting, "Put it in my bot."
I was, because, you know, obviously a football ground is a very sort of like alpha male kind of, you know, occasionally homophobic area. So I was just shouting, like, come and give me a kiss, lads, and like nobody was...
Yeah, you were also trying to lift our spirits when we were 2-1 down with such chanting. And yes, I appreciated that.
You had a testing few days. It all came out.
You can hear it in my voice, to be honest.
It was cathartic, was it? That was a sort of chant and a look that said, I've seen things. I've seen things you couldn't even imagine.
And you know what? Just when Marcus or Luke, you mentioned that the beer was non-alcoholic, this is the exact point where I actually found out that it was non-alcoholic. So
I didn't know that before,
so I'd like to thank you for that.
But in fairness, you were drinking it. You had a few actual beers before the game.
I was a bit sleepy, and I think the sugar had sort of perked me up a little bit, and I could feel that a little bit.
I said to Jim earlier, did you know the beer in the game was non-alcoholic? And he went, no, I didn't. But thinking about it, it did taste of lavender.
It was very, very sugary, wasn't it?
It was a very strange sugary beer.
But should we talk about the game itself?
Well, yeah. I'll do the links.
All right.
So, a bit more about the fans. No, England, they played a 4-4-2. Everyone was talking about 4-4-2 against France. It wasn't. It was a 4-4-1-1, obviously. But this was a bit more of a 4-4-2.
Very traditional.
And
Gerrard, opportunity to do his Hollywood balls a lot.
Oh, he did. And he got one perfectly right. But did the 4-4-2 for England work?
It's an interesting one. It did seem at points that Hodgson had got his tactics wrong, because it was the two banks of four were quite easily manipulated and exploited.
Especially by Zlatan.
But we did give away two absolutely shocking goals, two absolutely ludicrous goals. So I'm not sure it did completely work. I think the game, the sort of tactics you employ against France, I mean, they're only slightly different, but worked better. And I think we'll see more of that against Ukraine.
But it's what we sort of said before, that Sweden... traditionally, the last few matches they've conceded a lot in the air, so probably that's who's the thing.
Andy Carroll was like a lightning conductor. Everything that came down, he won, didn't he?
Yeah. He did, but at the same time, he had so much to do that when he won it, that he often couldn't do anything more with it because he was just crowded out. And I did wonder how effective that actually was.
I've got a newfound respect for Andy Carroll. What, he put an absolute shift in.
It was great. Yeah,
he led the line really, really
His
well.
His goal, he took superbly.
He did, and that's an underrated, sort of underappreciated talent to lead the line that way.
Yeah.
Especially sort of on your own, because Welbeck was dropping a bit deep. Mm. But I thought that Hodgson set up wrong. I know it's easy to say with hindsight, but I'd have thought, look, Sweden lost their first game. Mm-hmm. They got France next. Yep. Realistically, the England game is the game we need to win. I'd have set up exactly the same. Maybe put Walcott in place of Milner. Mm-hmm. Had Young and Welbeck as before, and just picked him off on the break.
Well, what was great about the game and Hodgson's reaction to going 2-1 down was that he immediately changed it up, and he did switch basically to that game plan, and it's to his credit that it worked.
It gave England the real impetus.
Well, it was when Milner got booked, he made the change, wasn't it?
It's nice to see we've got a plan B. as well, which has obviously been a big
problem. Well, it started with the plan
for so long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the plan A, but then where you go after that. But I think with the first goal, I think that gave us a bit of a false sense of sort of like, oh my God, we've let a goal in. Because it was just Zlatan hammered the ball at the wall. It came back to him. He did one of those silly scissor volleys. It didn't work. And
it dropped to Melbourne. Yeah, who was played on by Johnson. He never pushed up.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably Johnson's own goal, was it?
It was. That's what it was given as, yeah.
Okay. Because we can't have Melberg scoring a brace.
Well, where I was...
at the tournament.
Where I was, it looked like a Melberg goal, and it was given on the stadium announcers as a Melberg goal. So when Melberg was going up for free kicks late on, I was thinking, God, he's on a hat-trick here.
Yeah.
I did have that as well.
But also, I mean, the second goal, I mean, Melberg has caused all that damage in the first place. Clearly he's had an influence on it if it's been given as a Melberg goal in the first place, and he's still completely unmarked for the second one.
Well, the
really
second goal,
they were queuing up for it to get that
they
one
were. They were all in disarray. I mean, we sort of looked at the replays and thought, whose fault? We decided it was about three people's fault, then thought, no, it was just a defensive shambles from England.
It was. Yes. It looked to me that, as you said, Marcus, earlier, that Ashley Cole had two men on him on the far post and didn't appear to call anyone across.
And Ashley Cole's about 5'8".
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And it was a bit shoddy.
Like Melbourne and all these big boys coming in at the back.
You'll get punished in tournament football for that sort of mistake, and not only that, you will not be allowed back in games against teams better than Sweden.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
And it's, they've got out of jail a bit there. I thought the Walcott introduction was an interesting one because it showed that you can defend in different ways on the flanks. If you put someone like Milner in there, he'll do the donkey work and he'll cover back well.
Yeah.
But if you put Walcott on there, that can also have a really good effect defensively because he can really push the fullback back and stop the overlaps by the fullback essentially being terrified of his pace.
That's right.
And it does the job the same job in different ways, really. Yeah.
It's interesting, I know that yourself and Lord Ramble felt that Glenn Johnson didn't have a great game, but from where we were sat, I mean, he put in two absolutely imperious tackles on the Ibrahimovic,
he
like
did,
properly
yeah.
game-saving. I thought Johnson...
At three, it were 2-1.
Yeah.
He covered Terry a lot, which I think he did in the first game against France as well.
Mm. I think there's a couple of facets to that sort of debate. One is, as Pete said, he had Terry to cover, who was showing up as being a bit shorter pace against Latin once or twice.
But I think he stood up against Ibrahimovic.
He played okay,
well.
Yeah.
Terry did very well.
But the thing about Johnson is, it's almost like... You mentioned those two tackles. That's typical Johnson. He relies on his recovery pace far too much.
Well, I don't think it was. I don't think it was his fault when Zlatan went through. I think it was the centre backs he covered for.
But one of the tackles, I'm pretty sure he dived in first, and then the guy nipped past him, and then he legged it back and put the tackle in. And
it all started to go wrong for England to a certain extent when people realised that Zlatan wasn't, because Zlatan played most of the first half in his own 18 yards,
very deep,
and then he started pushing out a little bit, and we thought, oh God, we've got a player on us now.
Yeah, I thought Zlatan had a sort of decent game when he sort of felt like it. It seemed to me sort of typical Zlatan stuff. Yeah. When they went 2-1 up, he sort of thought, oh, I fancy a bit of this.
Yeah.
And he drove at England's defence and worried them a little bit. But a lot of the time, he's a very frustrating player to watch, because I felt for the rest of the Sweden side, because when they didn't have the ball, it was almost like they were playing with 10 men. Because he trots around. He doesn't push or pull people over. He just trots around, really.
Yeah.
And not only that, when Sweden were attacking, if he didn't fancy bombing on forward, they'd have a guy in the sort of right wing position ready to cross. He'd be back on the halfway line.
Yeah. Well, that's what Jim said. Like, he just sort of amble around. But then you made the point that Thierry Henry did that.
A lot of really big players, they conserve energy. You know, they're not bombing around, pulling the shape around for that very reason. But then at the same time, Zlatan's not really a sort of player that bases his game on pace as much as
I thought Zlatan was pretty good actually for the first day.
Yeah.
There's an incredible moment where he literally shrugged Johnny and Lescott.
He was
off the ball.
So strong.
He's a big guy.
He is strong, Zlatan, very strong.
Unbelievable.
But
so.
I think at the time I sort of said that if Andy Carroll wants to be an international striker for the next 10 years, he's the sort of player that he should be watching.
Absolutely.
Because he is a little bit of he's massive. He can he can handle about three or four players at the same time.
Yeah, it's really difficult to get him off the ball, but the combination of his skill and his strength is very difficult.
A lot of the Swedish fans we spoke to after, and a couple of players in the media, have said that they were unlucky and they felt they deserved to beat England, and very critical of the Seb Larsson certainly was, saying that England were quite lucky. They were just very defensive and just played long balls. Yeah. This kind
That's
of thing.
Only true up until 2-1 down. You know, when we won the game by changing up the system, we weren't playing long balls. We were feeding Walcott and just ping it around.
I thought the first 10 or 15 minutes was a game of horrible quality. It's all over the place. It's got schoolyard stuff. And if you take away the fact that England made you know, what is essentially a couple of crass errors, really, schoolboy defending errors, then I don't think Sweden offered all that much. I don't remember Hart making that many brilliant saves.
Well, Hart was brilliant. He was very dominant in his area. He was sort of diving at people's feet and just snatching the ball away quite a lot. And he did have a few saves to
He made
make,
one but, amazing save from Zlatan.
But there was, other than that, he didn't have... they were mostly routine saves.
I don't think Sweden can have too many complaints, really.
No, I don't.
I mean, it could have gone either way, couldn't it? It was one of those games.
Two goals at the end of the day. You know?
Yeah, but England's quality, I think, they've got better quality than Sweden, let's be honest. Yeah. And I think we got through with that.
Walcott's goal was a strange one. Because it looked like it swerved in the air, but I think
Larsson said his quote was, "It touched the slightest millimetre of my shin pad, but it was enough to cause problems for the keeper."
I assumed it was a deflection, but I was side onto it. I wasn't behind it or anything, so I couldn't see.
We certainly celebrated that. In the Sweden end. And then Danny Welbeck.
We celebrated that one twice. Yeah. Because we saw it going in, we went absolutely mental. Marcus is going, "Del Piero, it's Del Piero." And then we saw the replay again and we all just went, "He meant it! He meant it!"
Yeah. It was an amazing finish.
Oh, it was so good for him. A likeable English player who's been playing well scores a goal of great quality
set up by another likeable English player.
Incredible. The times are a-changing.
One of the most encouraging things about Welbeck is that he's only 21 and he does seem to be improving with every game for England.
His general forward play, as we've said before, is very, very
really
good.
And it was
as it was against France. He's done very, very well. I think it will be him and Rooney.
What a delightful thing.
Against Ukraine.
They've got to go to that system with Rooney just behind Welbeck and Young out wide. I thought Young had a quiet game.
Young put a shift in though, didn't he? Young was quite deep a lot of the time. He was acting, playing very defensively himself, actually.
The trouble is, how many times are we going to keep saying, "Oh, but he put a shift in. You know, as you say, if you really want to go on in this tournament, someone's got to really stand out now.
Well, he's defending from the front when necessary, so I think, you know, Hodgson would have drilled
Jim,
that into
him. Bear in mind that he comes into the tournament in great form, but bear in mind he was marshalled pretty effectively by Ali Diarra against France, who isn't even the first choice in that position for France, and then he was quiet again against Sweden, who are basically, if you look at it, you know, to put it in the simplistic terms, are pretty much a poor man's England. Would he have enough quality to really influence the game in the later stages? Should we progress against someone like Spain?
He made himself a very, very good chance, which he missed and hit into the side netting. I think there's more to come from Young.
He's growing
into it.
I think he's a decent player at international level. I just think he's had a bit of a quiet couple of games. That could all change against Ukraine, of course.
He's not Sean Wright Phillips.
No, he emphatically
and that's his problem.
Yeah. I thought Oxlade-Chamberlain could have had a goal late on, but Gerrard took it on like his wrong foot,
didn't he? Hollywood foot.
I'm surprised that he didn't shout for it at least,
maybe,
because it was clearly his shot. Because Gerrard originally started that move and he clearly sort of went, "I'm too slow for this," and he farmed it out.
Gerrard seemed to tire quite a lot.
Was that maybe a little worry for England? They got the ball in some good positions late on and should have finished the game off at 4-2.
I certainly think, and I may sound a bit harsh here, but I wrote a report of the game and I said in the game, and I still stand by this, I think that certain sort of occasions during that game we saw old England again. Poor decision making, sort of giving the ball away, crass errors, and almost there was a temptation by Gerrard much more than against France of sort of trying to do it himself a little bit, which I didn't like to see at all.
But Parker had a good game.
He did. He put a shift. I didn't like to see him in his flashy new boots.
No,
you didn't like that, did you?
He's
also
they?
Closing the goalkeeper down late on, which is a strange one. You think of all the players up there doing that. That's very odd. But he's got that engine on him that I suppose allows him to do that when other players have knackered themselves out.
At least
I did think we could have got to 4-2. There were a couple of chances.
Walcott
should have just used his raw pace to actually just force himself into the position where he could shoot, and also, of course, that Oxlade-Chamberlain, Gerrard kind of mix up at the
but
end.
But there was an earlier chance for Gerrard as well, but he chose the he made a choice that he makes a little bit too often. "I'll do a dive instead. I'll pretend I'm body
really
checked."
Frustrating to see.
But his ball in for the first goal was immense.
Drilled.
It's so nice to have Theo Walcott there. There's suddenly the pace. And for the third goal, he was superb because he went in between the defenders, and it was either a case of, "You're going to have to let me cross it or foul me for a pen." Great play
and
from Walcott.
He looked up, you know, he knew where Welbeck was. I mean, obviously, he did hit it a little bit behind him, but Welbeck scored a sort of Michael Jackson-esque goal. That will live long in the memory.
I think that a lot of people have been critical of Walcott, probably us even.
We have.
People were saying he's not, I mean, Chris Waddle especially said that famously he's not really got a football brain, so he'll not really progress. I think he played excellent yesterday.
Yeah, he said in the season that he's been consistent in patches. He needs to change that.
You can't argue with that.
No.
I mean, you know, we've talked about England's, you know, some nice moments and not so nice moments. and old England and one thing and another. But at the end of the day, England are playing against a side who they've never beaten at a competitive match, I don't believe. We've struggled against Sweden many times before. Yeah, we haven't played particularly well, and we've won.
Yeah.
It's so nice for England to win a game like that, a topsy-turvy game, which in tournament football historically will lose.
Again, for me, it's because of that plan B. It's great to see that England have got that option of mixing things up in a way that they're clearly comfortable doing. It's great. And it's incredible that Hodgson's managed to get that Georgian into them so quickly. He's obviously keeping it simple in a couple of different ways. And
but I did think the reason they struggled in patches was because they had to... I think they're a much better reactive team under Hodgson.
I think so, yeah.
And they had to move forward and take the game to swing on occasion, and it sort of became a bit at the behest of defensive discipline, which you can't do. I think they should just stick to that plan they played against France and pick teams off.
Well, Ukraine need to beat England.
Yeah.
And so therefore they're going to come at England as well. Mm. And so I think, again, going back to that more reactive play. Sweden very annoyed at England's sort of, they said England were very defensive and all, but...
Did you see the defending for your goals?
I was going to say, you know, you can't rely on that kind of behaviour.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. England are playing to their strengths, which is what every single team at the tournament needs to be doing. We can't be trying to play tiki-taka because we're going to mess it up.
Yeah. It'll be suicidal, that would, yeah. There's absolutely no danger of that.
Indeed. It was nice to see Joe Hart go up against Zlatan in a bit of a bit slanging of off match.
I missed that completely.
Well, it was when Sweden scored their second and they celebrated in just in front of Joe Hart.
Pretty
I think
much
they
in
nudged
the goal.
Yeah, they kind of
but
nudged
didn't,
him.
Didn't Zlatan drink it from Joe Hart's water bottle as well?
That is.
Did he? I think that's what I heard.
That was before the second goal. He just reached in, picked it up, had a swig, put it back. I mean, that is entitlement.
Oh, I didn't see that. Well, yeah, when they celebrated, he kind of nudged Hart, and Hart just sort of pushed him out of the way. Zlatan massively mouthed him off, and Hart probably said something back at him.
But I thought Hart was going to say something at full time, but he didn't, did he, to his credit? He just pretty
well, there's no pies, heat of the moment kind of stuff.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
But England did win, and what was nice to see as well in the Olympic Stadium was a couple of Blackburn fans had a keen out banner using the international arena for what it should be.
I think you're giving too much credit. I think it was right, we're off to Kiev, so we need to make a banner. We've got this old one, who's take that
out. It's still relevant. Yeah. If anything, I mean it more than I ever have.
Yeah. Me and Marcus saw a brilliant England flag yesterday, didn't we?
No, we never.
It had Rangers on it. Yeah, it had a Rangers and a Spurs logo on the England one.
We also saw an England shirt with Shola on the back.
Oh yeah,
there was West Ham 66, bit annoying. Worst one, Falklands 82.
That's horrendous behaviour.
What's going on with that?
Horrendous behaviour.
There's a Swedish one with Ivan Drago on it.
There's another Swedish one with When in Rome on the back.
Was there?
And I think there was another guy next to him who had that.
Ciao Italia.
Yeah.
There was one in the Sweden end with Roy Hodgson written on the back, which is quite nice.
Wow. Yeah, the Swedish chaps I chatted to before the game loved Hodgson. They loved Kenny Pavey as well, obviously.
And then they pulled a sink off the wall as
This
Viking man just pulled a sink off the wall.
I've got a photo of that, so you can't deny it. I also saw a guy with an old sort of mid-90s Swedish tracksuit top on that he had written on in felt tip pen, Lundberg, on the back.
I like that.
Nice.
There was a couple of older Swedish guys next to me, which was quite rare because often Swedish fans are quite young guys, aren't they? Sort of 20s and 30s.
Well, it's actually strangely with the England fans, just
more middle-aged.
They've mostly been middle-aged, balding pitbull men.
Mouth breathers.
Yeah. We sat next to these Swedish guys and I was like, all right, you know, and I said, yeah, sorry, I don't know why we're in this end. And this old Swedish guy just went, oh, shit happens.
All the Swedish fans normally, as you just touched on, look like they've just come down from the foothills and they have an axe over their shoulder.
Yeah.
They spent the day chopping wood.
Very handsome.
Yeah, very handsome, sort of very fresh-faced.
Yeah.
A lot of cheekbones on this.
Very, very similar to the English. Now,
present company excluded.
Rooney will be back for the Ukraine game.
Yeah, it's like a secret weapon, isn't it, that everyone knows we've got.
Because the camera keeps going to him, that's why.
I think Hodgson's big challenge actually is to, I think he will play him, I think he'll play him in that role and he'll drop Carroll despite him having a good game, but his biggest challenge is to keep him sort of almost chained. He'd be so keen to play. You don't want him doing something stupid, which I know it's a cliche, but he does do it all the time.
Indeed.
And bear in mind,
and that's the whole reason he's not
playing
exactly. In the first place. Yeah.
That's right. Ukraine, of course, lost to France 2-0
after an absolutely monumental thunderstorm.
Thunder and lightning.
I'm going to say biblical.
It was. Yeah. Old Testament.
Yeah.
We thought it was coming our way, didn't we?
Ukrainian God was furious.
Why didn't they send up the rockets?
Throw
the clouds out.
That's a good point.
Maybe they
giving
did.
It all the big one, weren't they?
Maybe they did.
They dealt with it. The game carried on, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't see that happening.
The pitch looked good as well, weirdly. Like, after that, it was ridiculous.
It drained very well.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous, the downpour. And there was puddles and all the rest of it. Well, not puddles, there's flipping rivers in the stadium.
Yeah, some of the fans were embracing it.
They loved it.
And then, as you say, Pete, when it came back on, they must have rolled that very well, the pitch. Get all the rain water off. And France had a nice time, didn't they? I mean, they didn't look in trouble. There was a moment when Andriy Shevchenko had a chance at 0-0, which I mean, he hit it well, but to the keeper, I thought he might have done a bit better.
It was a true shot, though. I do disagree with your take on that.
But France looked the better for pretty much the whole game.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw the first half because we had to leave to go to the game afterwards, but I saw the second half today.
And
I thought Ribéry and Benzema looked very good.
Benzema dropping a bit deeper, isn't he?
Yeah, he was. He's getting amongst it, yeah.
Menez was a menace.
He
was just everywhere.
France are the strongest team in the group.
I think when, Benzema drops deep like that, if you've got a player like Menez, who's quite quick and nippy, he can kind of slot in up front, you know, and which he did for his goal.
They sort of played five across the middle, didn't they?
Well, they did, yeah. But if Benzema's dropping deeper, then maybe the two wingers kind of push in.
Yeah.
And Kabay wrapped it up 3 minutes later.
I think France will see off Sweden as well, who are obviously still going home.
Well, the hope for me is that Sweden will be playing for pride, perhaps get a draw, and if we can beat Ukraine, we can then avoid Spain in the next round.
There's so many Swedish fans there. There's no way they're going to go out half-heartedly.
Exactly.
No way.
Yeah, it's true.
It's the first tournament match France have won since the semi-final of World Cup 2006.
Ooh. That's big.
Good fact.
How about that?
They're an absolutely torrid time in the last World Cup. It's embarrassing for them.
Indeed. Laurent Blanc was absolutely delighted with the France win, as he should be. I mean, that side, there was a lot spoken about France before the tournament. I know they've had this unbeaten run, but people are saying Blanc hasn't quite found the formula yet and so on and so forth. They look good, don't they?
That's what the group stages is largely about for the bigger teams, isn't it? It's finding the most effective way to get your team, you know, really firing on all cylinders. We've said about Germany before, you know, they've not quite got going yet in you know, to playing the dazzling football we expect. But it's just true of every team that's ever won a major international tournament. You do start kind of slowly but still winning. And both France and Germany are in that perfect position at the moment.
Absolutely. It was quite funny. I was looking on them internets today in the Daily Mail. There was a headline which said Blanc was delighted with the France win but takes new swipe at England. He never mentioned England once in the whole thing. The only thing I can maybe pick out was he said, yeah, it was a good game against Ukraine. Both sides attacked. That's the only thing I can think.
What the press need to understand.
What the Daily Mail needs to.
We are a defensive team.
Yeah.
There's no point like getting annoyed at other people for pointing it out. We are.
Do you mean you said the game against Sweden, both teams attacked? Both teams attacked?
No, France, Ukraine, I'm saying.
Oh, so how does that relate to England?
I have no idea, but it says, you know, Blanc takes new swipe at England. He never mentioned England once, he never mentioned the previous. Nonsense, absolute nonsense.
I actually think that the Ukraine, it was tough for them against France because they qualify as hosts. They haven't played a competitive game for absolutely ages. So it's so difficult for them to get their stuff together and work out what they're really made of. If because you qualify as host, you don't get a chance to qualify. That's part of the reason why the teams who were the holders, they passed a law or a motion saying that they wanted to qualify again rather than qualifying as holders because they never get to play any
games. That's right.
Yeah. Sad for Shevchenko.
I think also, though, the fact that they beat Sweden 2-1 coming from behind with both goals from Shevchenko, I think surprised a lot of the Ukrainians and sent them into raptures, and they thought, bloody hell, we weren't sure what we had. And especially with Shevchenko scoring the two goals, they all went absolutely crazy. And as Oleg Blokhin, the manager, said, he was disappointed with his team because he thought some of them already had their mind on the quarterfinals. They thought, we've won our first game. All we need is a point, maybe two.
And we'll beat England, sort of.
Exactly. But, you know, I think that could be bad news for England because, you know, they were good in their first game, disappointing in the second.
Yeah, they're going
to
be really.
And it's kind of like, right, okay, we need to get cracking here. And the home crowd roaring them on in Donetsk.
In a winner-takes-it-all scenario.
Well, exactly.
I think they've got a decent chance, but it depends how England's set up.
Well, a point would do England.
But that's dangerous in itself,
exactly,
isn't it?
Well, it is dangerous, yeah. But again, like I said, I think set up against France, but like in the first 30 minutes against France, you'll get a few gaps. And against Ukraine, more favourable conditions, I think that the gaps will appear because they're not as good as France, you know, and I think we'll be okay.
What I would say is that it was quite heartening that when we were 2-0 we didn't go and play for the draw, and even like the 89th minute we weren't just taking it into the into the corner. They wanted another one,
but Sweden were pushing, weren't they? They needed the point real bad, so they were pushing and then they left gaps, and it's, and you're right, it's good that England were deemed themselves sort of worthy enough to sort of exploit them.
Indeed. Well, we shall see what Group D,
next game on Tuesday, when we'll be back,
serves us up on Tuesday as as the final round there. Group C, the Irish have gone home after being beaten 4-0 by the Spanish.
Group Yes in Spanish.
Torres getting a brace.
Yeah. Oh.
The first one in about 3 or 4 minutes smashed it home.
That's the Torres we want to see. He was exceptional.
It's like he's never been away. It's like he's picked up where he left off in the last few Euros.
From the Euros, yeah. And David Silva and Fabregas also getting on the score sheet.
Murdered that ball into the net.
He did.
It was like he was saying, I've had enough of this.
Yeah. He was annoyed with the opposition almost. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How dare you?
Two goals for Cech now. He's not starting games. He didn't start this game, did he?
No.
No, yeah, okay, right, yeah, yeah.
The Irish were abject at times, though.
Yeah. Oh, really, but I mean, the thing that really stands out for me is that Spain, clearly the best team in the tournament, you would argue, you know, the way they play. They play like a club side, it's brilliant.
Oh, they do.
Of course it is. And Ireland, probably the worst team in it. The golfing class is absolutely huge. So if you're adding another six teams on top of that, another eight teams on top of that, it just dilutes the competition. We all know this is going to happen, but that is the clearest indication of it. Yeah,
I mean, according to reports, Spain broke all sorts of records against Ireland for a European game. That's 76% possession, and it's so obvious. And I know you sort of come across like a bit of a pseudo intellectual when it comes to football, but playing that striker gives them so much penetration.
Oh, absolutely.
The balance just seems to be completely restored, and it's almost like you're not concerned for them. If you're a Spanish supporter, you're nowhere near as concerned when you've got a Torres or a Llorente on the bench, on the pitch, because you know the penetration is going to be there. They're going to have the cutting edge to finish the moves off. And it happened, as you just touched on, Marcus, within about 3 minutes in the game against Ireland. And then Ireland were really up against it because of the way they set up.
True. I mean, the Ireland game is very different to the Italy game. I think the Spanish they're worried about Italy. Italy have been a bogey team for theirs for a while. And I just think they thought against Italy, let's just dominate the midfield and try and push up as a unit. They've got a back three. They're maybe trying a different system as well. I don't know, but certainly against Ireland, they're always going to play a forward.
Of course.
Yeah. And they certainly did.
You know, Fernando Llorente's full name is actually Fernando Llorente Torres.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Fernando Torres in there.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
They should name him that and just not tell him which one they're going to put on.
Yeah. Well, give him the same number.
Yeah, same name, everything. Right, yeah.
Makes it fair for everyone else.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant.
And then you could let the crowd decide. So you could do the old substitution. Yeah. When they both turn up, you say, well, what about this one?
Yeah. But I'd make him have the same haircuts and everything.
Yeah. So you only can tell what player it is by where he stands on the pitch.
I'll play them both.
Excellent. Steve McManaman said, if Spain win this competition, they will become the best team of all time. Better than Brazil 1970.
Lovely.
Is McManaman the man to say such a thing?
I tell you, he's got that's a decent shout. Three international tournaments on the bounce.
It's good to see El Maca giving an interview to ESPN Deportes in Spanish.
Oh, he speaks.
Loves it. Yeah. Absolutely. But it's great to see him.
Real hero at Madrid.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great to see an Englishman talking foreigns.
But you think Spain will have enough to go past Croatia?
Well, that's right. Yeah. Staying on Ireland, though, Roy Keane was rather irritated with what he described as Ireland's only here for a sing-song attitude. Because the only thing people seem to talk about Ireland in a positive light is the fans, which, of course, deserve great praise and credit. But they can't do that at home.
I've still not seen the ITV interview, but apparently Keane went on a bit of a rant.
He did. He was critical of Trapattoni as well. But the big Italian responded. He said, Roy Keane has been a very great player, but what did he do after he stopped playing? Roy, are you a big manager? He should concentrate on getting results as a coach.
Fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trapp's got an amazing track record as a coach. You know, give him credit as well.
Also, it is a shame that they didn't just go for a little more. They were very, very conservative. It would have been good to start James McLean, you know.
But
I know they're never going to have a realistic chance against Spain. But
I like Roy Keane. I think he speaks a lot of sense into it, and he's a breath of fresh air amongst sort of media and stuff a lot of the time. But there is an element of it. If he carries on doing it too much, he'll just become like a bit of a sniper from the sidelines.
Well, he did say, didn't he, while he was a manager, that he wouldn't want to go on and be a pundit, so that you end up in studios with people like Richard Keys who are talking rubbish.
And Keys is gone now.
Yeah. No, he's in the situation. He's
imagine Keane as an actual presenter.
God,
like presenting the TV show.
I can't.
It'd be terrifying.
It would be like there'll be no sort of like big flowery monologues. It's that it's a lovely day, football start, and it's got
the voice in my veins.
What do you think about the game? Come on!
That's your phone.
Yeah,
I would perish the thought. And there was talk of the 73-year-old Trapattoni resigning, but he shooed away such talk to reporters, saying, "We achieved qualification to the Euros after 24 years. This is our right to stay. I have more enthusiasm to stay than you and your colleagues. The Irish people can decide. I know your jobs. After 40 years, I know the job of a reporter."
It's interesting with Ireland, because they came into the tournament with such a decent defensive record. I mean, they're like the three games going into the game, going into the tournament, were like 1-0 winning against Bosnia, they drew 1-0 Hungary, and they drew 1-0 Czech Republic. They don't seem to be a team who make a lot of defensive mistakes, but it just seems the occasion's got to them.
Yeah, well, it's the quality as well. Croatia and Spain are obviously so much better than those teams, you know. And obviously, we're still with Italy to come. It's just that they've not been good enough when it's come to it at the tournament. It does seem odd that, you know, they've built themselves on their defence, and that's what's so emphatically let them down.
But,
as I say, it's a completely different kettle of football, isn't it?
It is. One big kettle of football.
But Italy, of course, drew 1-1 with Croatia. Surprising, I thought.
Yeah, Italy seemed to have that absolutely wrapped up in the first half. We were watching that in the fan park, and we were both like, yeah, they've got this.
Croatia paid for the draw in the first half, by the look of it.
Pirlo got the scoring underway with a lovely free kick.
It's a strange relationship between Balotelli and Cassano, because they work very well together, and they seem to look for each other a lot, but almost too much. They both had opportunities where they could have shot, but instead looked for the other, and it just, the moves broke down.
Cassano's preoccupied with the gay men in the squad.
Yeah. Well, he's made his feelings. Well,
I think Cassano's got a lack of fitness. I think towards the end of the games, he's tired badly.
It's not surprising.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, as a manager, and I like Prandelli, I think he's decent, but
he seems to take off Balotelli
exactly.
To Di Natale.
Christmas, yeah.
But it's one of those things where he's caught between two stools, because does he take Balotelli off, who's probably going to lose his temper at some point, or does he take Cassano off, who looks unfit? He seems to be bringing on Giovinco as well a little bit. I think they've got a little bit of a lack of cutting edge, and Rakitic was excellent for Croatia against Italy, and Mandzukic obviously scored again.
Well, yeah, Croatia came right back in it in the second half and deserved their equaliser, but Chiellini perhaps at fault.
Yes.
Ball going over his head.
Dreadful mistake from such an experienced defender. Completely misjudged it. I mean, in fairness, if we saw John Terry doing something like that, we'd hammer him for that.
We would, yeah.
Chiellini's an experienced, decent defender. You know, he's played a lot of games at the highest level. It's unacceptable in tournament football, that.
Yeah.
If he does that at a knockout game, they could go home for that.
Yeah, but it's interesting you say about Cassano's fitness, because Prandelli's actually concerned with the fitness of a lot of the players, because they've dropped off after kind of 60 minutes in both of their matches.
Yeah.
I mean, Spain could have won it.
Tempo,
you know,
they're not used to, aren't they? It's a very kind of new thing for them.
But do you not think with the Spain thing, it's almost excusable, because Spain have so much of the ball and you spend so much of your time pressing, it's almost like a different kettle of
football. But against Croatia, though,
is it the formation they're playing? Maybe,
well, maybe they're not used to that. Yeah, I mean, certainly the wing backs might get a little bit tired out.
I think it might just be impressive, aren't it? Yeah, I think it's pretty much worked. I mean, they've not lost games.
Well, surely they'll beat Ireland.
Yeah, they should do.
I mean, it's funny actually, because if Spain and Croatia play out a 2-2 draw, then exactly the same will happen to Italy as it did in Euro 2004, and they'll go home.
I can't see Croatia getting two against Spain.
Well,
even with Spain taking their foot off the gas and putting in some of their sort of squad players, because they've just got such a deep squad.
Yeah.
It's the same with Germany in their sort of dead rubber game. You know,
Spain's midfield, you could play any of them, and they still operate at the very highest level. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely,
they've still got enough to beat Croatia.
It was nice.
They need to beat them as well.
Bilic didn't have the beanie, but he certainly enjoyed the equaliser. It was quite funny, because when the ball came over, the camera. You see the shot of the manager, you know, when he celebrates the goals, they often do. And Bilic, he sees the ball coming over, obviously, and he starts trotting. And he's trotting and trotting, and then it goes in. And then I think someone from the crowd is, like, behind him, hugging him, you know, leaning over.
Is he enjoying it?
I would absolutely
love it. He was not very happy with the ref, was he?
He wasn't happy with Howard Webb's performance. He said he was a referee who helped the Italian team a lot. Then he went on to say, "I don't agree with coaches who don't comment on referees. This is very important for my job. I didn't like the referee's performance. He was not good for the Croatian team."
See, I think that's absolutely fair enough. I know people seem to really hate managers criticising referees. But it's just, they're entitled to their opinion. You know, I think they do have an effect on the game. I agree with Bilic on that.
But he seems to be not only complaining about refs, he seems to be saying to every other manager, "Come on, get involved.
Let's gang up on it.
Let's get on their backs, and they'll be under more pressure and probably make more mistakes.
Let's bully these geeks."
Just going back briefly to the England game, the fifth officials, the guys who stand in the area, they talk to the referee and they press buttons, don't they? Because there was a really obvious... A lot of TV stuff in the UK has been saying they don't do anything. But they obviously do, because yeah. there's a very clear thing in the corner, as you just touched on, where it wasn't given, and all of a sudden the referee turned around, seemed to look over towards that guy, and it was called back and it was given a corner. Yeah. So they obviously are doing things. You know, they just don't wave a flag or jump around doing interpretive dance. Doesn't mean they're not doing.
I don't like it when they get on the pitch. I don't like when they encroach on the pitch. It's like, stay off the pitch.
Yeah, the views of Pete Donaldson.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, really. We're Group C and D. We've got the conclusion of Group A this evening. Mm-hmm. So I hope you find a nice beanbag to sit and watch that on. And then we've got one more show from Kiev, or whatever you like to sit on to watch football. Yeah. We were talking about this, a fan park. We wanted some beanbags. Well,
there are beanbags around. They're just not where they need to be. Yeah, but Marcus and I saw some.
The fan park the fan park in Kiev is, as we've said before, is a big, long, closed-off street with different big screens.
It's the main street through the city as well.
But there's nothing that I've seen to sit on. You're just sitting basically on the road.
Yeah.
And as I walked back through the fan park on the way home from the game yesterday, it was absolute carnage. Mm-hmm. It was like some sort of bomb had gone off.
It was a right mess, wasn't it?
And there was bottles and plastic cups everywhere. Slightly sort of disorientated, drunk people wandering around. Yeah. I decided that the worst job in the world would be to get that, clear that park at the end of the night.
Well, like, I don't know.
There was a bloke, there was a volunteer, because there's a lot of green-shirted volunteers here. Mm. Helping out, which is amazing to see, especially because it can be confusing with the street signs and and that lot. And there was this guy, young fella, who was explaining, I presume in Ukrainian, to these two guys who were Ukrainian, and it was closed now. And they both just sort of nonchalantly looked up at him, carried on drinking their beer, and the other one just lit one of the other guy's cigarettes for him. Just ignored him. And I was thinking, come on. Go to a pub. They're open 24 hours.
It's true.
Yeah.
And we've certainly taken advantage of that, haven't we, Beatles?
No.
Well, there we are. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com.
show@thefootballramble.com.
And Twitter, of course. And the website is thefootballramble.com, Luke.
It is, yeah. There's still plenty of stuff. I mean, we're over here in Kiev, but there's still plenty of stuff happening on the site. There's a video posted yesterday of you guys in the stadium.
Yeah.
I imagine there'll be more to follow.
I'm being misrepresented again.
Yeah. It's not easy being you, Marcus.
No.
And there's really lots of blogs and lots of different things going on, so please do check it out. And if you want to tweet us, it's obviously @FootballRamble.
There we are. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Bye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Bye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.